Blog Talk Radio.
What are you doing up here? You been benched yet?
Yes, some real first in my professional career. I've been benched.
Why is that?
I won't fight.
Well, you could play if you fought. How's it going, everybody? It is Chris Block here, the Third Man in Radio, here on this Monday night, January 31st, 2011, 8 o'clock here in Chicago as we await the blizzard of 2011 that I think is going to produce about 3 inches of snow. I was just looking at the radar a little bit ago, but we'll talk about that in a second. It is the Third Man in Radio. I am Chris Block, writer, editor, and creator, whatever, of thethirdmanin.com. Here on blogtalkradio.com/thethirdmanin. Superstar, are you there?
I am here.
All right. I'm rushing through this because we're going to try to rush through the show tonight, and I'll explain why in a little bit. A lot to talk about on the show tonight. We are 28 days away now from the NHL trade deadline. I would expect some movement, and perhaps here locally in Chicago, before that trade deadline does commence, which also means 28 days away from the trade deadline. We are now 69 days out from the conclusion of the 2010-11 NHL regular season. Just 69 days left here. Blackhawks have 32 games, and we'll be talking about a lot of teams in the NHL. And to do that with us here tonight, he is the host of the Breakout Hockey program. You can find that at breakouthockey.podomatic.com. He is Adam Summers. How are you doing tonight, Adam?
Doing very well, guys. Thank you very much for having me on the show. I'm a little bit disheartened, though, that you guys do not believe in Snowmageddon.
I don't know much about it. I honestly don't watch much TV news, but I just looked at the radar because everybody's freaking out. I'm getting text messages off the hook about this. I have a building that I have to be concerned about. And I just looked at the radar, and everybody's like saying this thing's going to go northwest. And if it's going northwest, we're about to get a little bit of snow, and then I don't know where the rest of the snow is coming from. I'm not a meteorologist, so I'll plead the fifth, but I'm not seeing where all this snow is coming from, if it's moving northwest.
Yeah, you definitely have not been watching Tom Skilling, which for your own mental health might be for the best. It's a panic is ensuing right now.
I need the physical exercise. I'm back up. The knee's ready to go. We got men's league starting up on February 10th, I believe, and I could use the exercise. So, I hope we get 3 feet of snow. It would do my cardiovascular wonders.
Now everyone who has to drive to work hates you, but okay.
Yes,
me included.
Why don't I get you on the show tonight, Adam, because, like I said, there's not much. Every season this happens where the season starts up and you're kind of going through it, and you kind of take for granted that it's this long marathon, and then all of a sudden it creeps up on you, and it's like, oh, my God, there's not that much time left. As we said, 32 games left for the Blackhawks. A lot of teams are in the same vicinity. Before we get into that, though, I want to address the main topic at hand. As promised, I did not watch anything other than bits and pieces of the fantasy draft on Friday night. But I know, Superstar, you watched it. Adam, did you see any of the All-Star Game festivities from over the weekend?
Yes, every single minute, actually.
And, I mean, I don't – it's just my personal preference that I don't watch rat hockey and the super skills I used to like. But I don't – I mean, I was busy on Saturday, so – what were your impressions overall of the weekend?
In terms of the All-Star Draft, I actually thought the All-Star Draft was probably the highlight of the weekend, which I'm sure a lot of people expected going in. It didn't necessarily result in any more intense of a game on Sunday. I mean, we certainly didn't see any body checks or anything like that, but if nothing else, it seemed like the players who were there, the guys that didn't pull out in the weeks leading up to it, seemed to be enjoying the experience a little bit more. The presentation on Friday for the All-Star Draft, I thought was very well done in that they walked that line of not going too far and it seeming too overdone and too schmaltzy, but also not seeming too small time. I thought that they did a great thing by just going with both on the Canadian feed and here in the United States on Versus, just going with the TSN feed, basically. James Duthie was a far better host than anybody Versus could have offered up. I did think it was kind of ridiculous, and I'd be interested in hearing your guys' take on this as well. The outcry from Brian Burke after the dust settled on Friday night regarding Phil Kessel being picked last and Brian Burke thinking it was such an outrage and that Phil Kessel shouldn't have had to go through that, and that coming maybe in the next couple of years they should instead have a lottery for the final five guys or so to determine who goes last, because it's just too much pain and heart picked last. And I think it's kind of ridiculous. I think it takes away from the spirit of what actually made the draft interesting, which was that you had professional athletes that were willing to be put in that position. Plus, he got a car. He got $20,000 to his favorite charity. So that seemed a little bit odd to me.
Well, I think, and I want to ask you, Superstar, here in a second, but I think, you know, it's Brian Burke defending his player. I would expect that Burke would do that. But let me ask you, Superstar, like, because I heard some of this, and like I said, I did see some of the draft, not all of it. There was people complained to me a little bit about the draft being a bit canned, and that it seemed as though, and I've heard this, that everything was predetermined and the draft itself was just a staged event, and there were all these interviews with these guys, very uncomfortable, being made to think that, you're never going to get picked and all this kind of stuff. What did you think of the draft on Friday night?
You know, I thought it was great, and I saw an interview, and for the life of me, I can't remember who was giving it, that, you know, who was Rob Blake, and he was mentioning how the guys hammed it up and kind of had a good time with it. I think that's what made it go over so well. And I really think hockey is the only sport that professional athletes would be willing to do this, given the nature of they're more low-key, down-to-earth, regular people. I couldn't see this happening in baseball or football or basketball. I thought it was a lot of fun, and you know, I don't know if there was a predetermined. Obviously, Jonathan Toews definitely seemed like he was sweating it out more than some of the other guys. But
well,
I
thing that I heard was, unless, and I doubt they did this, unless you know, two jerseys were made up, like there was a Team Stahl jersey and a Team Lidstrom jersey made up for each player. It seemed like,
from what I saw.
Yeah,
there were two jerseys, I'm pretty sure, made up for each guy. We definitely saw that in the for the rookies when they took the stage. They each had one of each jerseys in hand. So that, I mean, that's a distinct possibility.
Okay. Well, my problem. Before, I want to move on, but my issue with the fantasy draft, and there was too many rules. I mean, you have to, all the goalies had to be drafted by round 10, and the defensemen had to be around. You know, if I was Brian Burke, I'd be upset about that, because the odds that Phil Kessel was going to be the last pick were increased, because it was, we obviously knew it was going to be a forward. Why was that the case? I mean, why can't these guys just pick the players in the order that they want? You know, they want to take them. You know, that's just my. I mean, it's not like you know, Lidstrom can take four goalies. He can take three goalies, and he takes them when he chooses to. So, I thought that was one problem I had with it. Too many rules in the draft. Just let the guys draft.
Right. Hey, now, Block, I don't know Phil Kessel's contract situation or if he's a guy that's possibly on the move and, you know, it looks bad. You know, I don't understand why Brian Burke, I mean, he was the last drafted player of the All-Stars. You know, it wasn't like he was the last taken in, you know, an NHL entry draft.
Adam, what do you think about that? Because a lot of people, I guess, on things like Twitter, and Twitter's a conversation for another day, but, you know, things like Twitter and online and I'm sure in message boards and things like that, we're all over Phil Kessel about being the last guy picked, and that should be no surprise. The guy has no heart, and all these things you hear about Phil Kessel. What are your thoughts on Phil Kessel?
I thought in terms of him being in the All-Star game, I found it a little bit interesting in that if you're going to have a representative from Toronto, and as much as it pains me to say it because I'm not a fan of this guy at all, but Mikhail Grabowski seemed to be a guy that fit the bill a little bit more than than Phil Kessel did. In terms of the reaction online and some of the people, Brian Burke included, like I mentioned earlier, saying, kind of giving the impression that Phil Kessel needed to be defended. I don't see that because, like you guys said, he was the last pick of the most elite players in the National Hockey League. And to me, if you can't, as a player or as a general manager, if you are that thin-skinned that you can't handle being the last picked of the best players in the National Hockey League, then you have a bigger problem than being the last picked player of the best players in the NHL. But Phil Kessel, I've said it before on my program, he's a nice player. He can put goals in the net, but he, to me, is not the type of guy that you build your team around. And I think that's the trap that Brian Burke has fallen into. And who knows, maybe he'll be able to pull a rabbit out of the hat, but I don't see the Toronto Maple Leafs becoming a Stanley Cup contender built around Phil Kessel.
I should start a podcast about, you know, just focusing on the Toronto Maple Leafs, because Brian Burke is fascinating. I could talk about him hours on end. But another team that I think that we could talk about for hours on end with you, Adam, is the Montreal Canadiens. And why don't you, you're obviously a Chicagoan, but I believe that, I think you've stated this in the past, that your second, you know, hockey love is the Montreal Canadiens. How did that come about?
It actually, that is correct, and it happened, I would say, late 80s, early 90s, as my hockey fandom grew, and as many people of my vintage, just shy of 30 years old, the original NHL game for the Genesis came out in the early 90s. And that was around the same time that I discovered Patrick Waugh. And I played many a game as the Montreal Canadiens, began to watch as many games at least as were on TV available here in the States for Montreal in the early 90s, and just began a love affair with that team. Like you said, my 1B to the Chicago Blackhawks being my 1A. And in terms of Montreal this year, we could do an entire show just about them. If anything, I think it's been a surprising year in that with Carey Price in the net, they've been far better than – and I have to take myself to task here, because going into the season, I was as concerned as anybody. I was the conductor of the Yaroslav Halak train, the bandwagon. I was on it. I believed in Halak for several years and had lost faith in Carey Price. And he's proven everybody wrong, including myself, at least to this point in the season. And the strength of the team is also what many people, I think, call out as the weakness, which is you've got a system with Jacques Martin that some of the more skilled players, particularly on the blue line, a lot of people talk about that they're not unleashed enough, that it's a very tightly structured team. And, yes, that does hold certain guys back, but it also allows for when you have the avalanche, if you pardon the pun, of injuries that they've had this season, the fact that they've weathered the storm as well as they have to where at this point in the season they actually are better off in terms of most statistical categories than they were last year, it's fascinating. I mean, you have Andrei Markov out for the entire year, Josh Georges out for the entire year, almost every other player of importance on the team has missed substantial time. The PK Subban controversy has raged, which we can certainly get into if you guys want to. But I think that for what they have, Jacques Martin has done a hell of a job, and they're better positioned than they were last year going into the playoff stretch.
Yeah, right now the Montreal Canadiens, almost a mirror image, different conference, different competition, but almost a mirror image to the Blackhawks record at this stage. Both teams currently sit in seventh in their conference, respectively, 27-18-5 for the Montreal Canadiens, 26-20-4 for the Blackhawks. Let me ask you this, though, about Carey Price. Obviously, Carey Price off to a terrific start, which is, you know, the best thing that ever could have happened to him and Pierre Gauthier, Montreal Canadiens, everybody considered. But he's also a guy that was under fire there. You know, the backup goalie and at the time, Halak, overtook him. And that was the second time that it happened in Montreal, actually, if going back to it was Huey was there when Price was trying to get time, was he not? Or that was Huey and Halak,
yeah,
right?
Well, they had Huey, and that's actually what Price and Halak led to Huey getting dealt. But, yeah, it's not the first time that Price has been given the reins and had fumbled them away.
So let's say, you know, down the stretch here, hypothetically, Montreal's They've got to play really good hockey. I mean, the only real contender there, unless Buffalo goes on an amazing streak, is the Carolina Hurricanes. It's the only team in the East that the Atlanta, Montreal, the Rangers are really concerned with, is the Carolina Hurricanes. Let's say that he has a terrible second half and they're fighting for their dear lives to get in. Do you think now, I mean, you were a Carey Price detractor, is there enough evidence there to say that Carey Price can trudge through that and maybe come out on the other side, whether it be in the playoffs or next season, and still be the number one? Or is this just a brief period of success in what will always be a chaotic situation there between Price and the fan base?
If you look at the results, obviously in the last couple of years, it's pretty hard to say that you can look at the evidence and say, well, if he does have a rough start to the post-All-Star break, that he'll pull through it. However, I look at more the change in demeanor for what that's worth and the change in work ethic, which really started last year during the playoffs when he, instead of pouting, seemed to really understand that he had lost the job. The only way he was going to get it back was by working hard. And in a lot of ways, if you recall, when he called out last year, he called out Sergei Kostitsyn basically for not working hard enough at all in practice. He actually made the comment of, oh, good enough, eh? Basically saying that that Sergei Kostitsyn thought he was too good for the team. From that point forward, it seemed like not only Carey Price's play, but his demeanor and the opinion of him by his teammates seemed to have changed. So if he can carry that sort of that thought process, and if he can fall back on the conditioning that it seems he put in this year, I think he can pull through. But again, we don't have the empirical evidence for that. And from Montreal perspective, they don't have a choice in that you most likely are not going to ride Alex Auld into the playoffs. For one, I don't think they're going to go that route. And B, if they have to, it's most likely not going to happen. So the story is going to be how Price reacts to not only being the guy in Montreal, but being the guy that has to do it down the stretch, and he doesn't have the bailout plan of Yaroslav Halak, in his back pocket.
You brought up PK Subban. When formulating my fantasy hockey teams this past fall, in a lot of drafts, I looked at him as my ace in the hole, with Andrei Markov, perpetually being injured, and Subban, the way he looked in the playoffs last year, obviously a colorful personality, and amazing young talent. But there's been controversies, like you said. What's going on there right now with PK Subban? Obviously, healthy scratch, 3 games in a row earlier in the year. Well, I mean, where is he at right now? And first let's start, I guess, with his relationship with Jacques Martin.
I think in terms of his game right now, going into the All-Star break, he probably is playing the best hockey he's played since last year's playoffs. If you look at the start of the year, came in, a lot of people are saying one of, maybe the top two or three Calder Trophy candidates, and he probably believed that a little bit too much, and it led into, like you said, the 3 games where he was scratched. He had a couple different periods where he was scratched for at least one, if not several games, and even coming back from that, when he first came back, his game was as bad, if not worse, than it was before he got scratched. It was all him trying to figure out, because he's a guy who, as you mentioned, incredibly talented, jumps up into the play, very, very offensively skilled, and as we mentioned before, in Jacques Martin's system, if you do that, you may be able to do it from time to time, but there's a time and a place, and it's not just run and gun, and he seems to have had a very difficult time figuring that out. As much as has been talked about in all the different controversies, you had the Mike Richards issue earlier in the year, some of the other stuff, the recent celebration, which I thought got blown way out of proportion with the overtime winner against Calgary. I think a lot of it has been him having to win over his own teammates in the locker room. Particularly, some people have talked about Scott Gomez, but I think a guy who now has ended up being Subban's D partner, that being Hal Gill, since Josh Georges has gone down. If you read between the lines, Hal Gill has not really been the biggest fan of PK Subban. Some of the stuff he said and hinted at earlier in the season, and he's been pretty overt in just saying that we've all kind of had to learn to love him, and he's made comments that, that rookies really do have to learn their place on the team. I think in the end, Hal Gill is the best thing for P.K. Subban, and that he's a guy who will hold him accountable on the ice, hold him accountable off the ice, but once that respect level's there, I actually think their games complement each other pretty well. So we'll see if he can carry out through the end of the year, but his game is certainly better than it was when he was in the press box with a with a security guard, which was a strange scenario for sure.
Obviously, it's maybe it's too early to tell, but your gut instinct, watching the Canadians, following them for as long as you can, and kind of a longtime hockey fan, understanding the Canadian markets and sort of that I mean, just even looking at Jonathan Toews, the way Jonathan Toews is presented to us here in Chicago, I think smart hockey fans, people that pay more attention than the average fan, understand that Jonathan Toews that's presented to us on a daily basis really isn't the true Jonathan Toews. He has the same agent as Sidney Crosby. They're both prepped the same way. You know, it's the persona that they're trying to get across. He's a perfect complement to Patrick Kane. In Montreal, can P.K. Subban, that type of personality, that kind of kid that's always on an energy high, can he exist in Montreal long term?
I actually think he can. I think that he's one of the few guys that, while he loves the spotlight, it seems, to me at least, it seems pretty genuine in that he doesn't seem like he's going to get gobbled up by it. To me, a guy like Carey Price, who, yeah, we have all seen the pictures, we know about him, you know, going out and having a good time, to say the least, but he doesn't have that engaging personality, and it seems like those guys really get cannibalized by that team, whereas Subban, for better or worse, and it has its negatives in that on the ice sometimes, it almost seems like in some ways he doesn't get fazed by things he should, and other things really get to him that probably shouldn't. But as far as playing in the market, I really don't see it being a problem. And you look at him leading up to being in Montreal, you look at how he handled and how he really ate up the spotlight in the World Junior Championships, and it seems as though, to me at least, he's been pretty well prepared for that, and he's not going to get devoured by it. And I hope, and I don't know his living situation in Montreal, but I pray to God that they aren't doing with him what they did with Carey Price when he first came to the league, which is basically, here, have a penthouse apartment in downtown Montreal and just have at it. And we all know that didn't work out too well.
Moving down the Eastern Seaboard, a team that I have personally labeled the San Jose Sharks of the Eastern Conference, the Washington Capitals, another flamboyant personality, Alexander Ovechkin. Surprisingly, at least to me, Alexander Semin takes another one-year contract extension this past week. I don't know if we should read anything into that, whether he's eyeing the KHL, he's one of those guys that desperately wants to play in the Olympics when they're in Sochi. I don't know what the deal is there. I personally think Alexander Semin is one of the problems with Washington Capitals. Adam, do you think that the Washington Capitals this season are poised to win in the postseason?
I certainly do not. I've talked about it before on my show. I'm not a fan of Bruce Boudreau as a coach. I also don't think that the mix of players is right for playoff success. Just going back to what you said about Semin, I kind of had the same reaction you did in that the one-year deal, it's a little bit interesting, and to me it points to a couple of things. A, I think on his end he thinks that he could have another big year next year, and one of two things will happen. If if we end up with, God forbid, another lockout or something along those lines, if there isn't a new CBA reached, he can go to the KHL and make big, big money with no strings attached back here. And if there is a new CBA, he, I would imagine, is banking on that being even more favorable for the players than what the situation is right now. I think, to me, the bigger surprise is that the Washington Capitals were fine with giving him, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe he's making, what, $6 million this year? So he's going to be getting nearly a $1 million raise for a season that started off very, very well, but certainly has not been spectacular the last couple of months. So a curious move there, but going back to Bruce Boudreau, I don't ever see him winning a Stanley Cup with that team. He's not the whole problem, but for the longest time, their system has been just rev them up and go. Just throw them out there and let Ovechkin, let Semin, let Backstrom, let them do what they're going to do. there's been talk that, oh, well, they're trying to be more defensive. Boudreaux's trying to institute a more defensive style, people playing at 24-7. But to me, that's partially true, but as much, it's just been the big guns on that team have not been producing to the level they've been before. You couple that with, again, a suspect system going into the playoffs and goaltending that I certainly don't believe in Michael Neuwirth and Semyon Varlamov / Braden Holtby being in there. Any of those guys as being Stanley Cup level goalies. And yeah, you could say, well, look at Antti Niemi last year, but to me, there's holes on the team. I don't feel like Scott Hanson necessarily addressed those, and I think they missed the boat by so far not going out to acquire at least one veteran goalie that you could look to a little bit. I thought Rolison would have been a nice pickup for them.
Yeah, I know some people have mentioned Nabokov with Washington, and while that would have made, especially for the money, would have made sense, I wonder whether or not there's still some lingering feelings about that Canadian-Russian team between Nabokov and guys like Ovechkin and Semin. You mentioned 24/7. I've talked with this a lot with people of late. HBO 24/7, obviously, as a documentary, was brilliant. I don't know how well it built up the game and how many fans watched 24/7 that wouldn't have watched the Winter Classic anyway. The rating didn't blow me away. It certainly went back. It reverted back to the rating of a couple of years ago. But the NHL Network is also doing a documentary, which I think is very good as well, which is follows the Edmonton Oilers around. It's called Oil Change. I'm assuming that you've seen both. What do you think about 24/7 and then maybe your thoughts on Oil Change?
Well, first on 24/7. First off, I thought it was far more entertaining than the Winter Classic itself. And granted, some of the things that occurred with the Winter Classic were subject to the elements. It was out of the control of the league to a certain extent. Then again, they put themselves in that situation. But obviously, with 24/7, it was like you said, it was a documentary. You saw a lot more than you see really in any other coverage. You also know that there were still things that we didn't see. I would imagine that for as epic as the tirades were from Bruce Boudreaux during the losing streak, he probably found a way at some point during those couple of weeks to go off on his team even more and probably call guys out more individually than we saw on the show. But on the whole, yeah, I thought it was great. I think that you probably did have some HBO subscribers who weren't hardcore hockey fans watching it, and I think they most likely, I haven't heard too many negative reviews, they probably enjoyed it. I don't know that's converted people to being full-time NHL fans, but I certainly don't think it hurt. In terms of Oil Change, had a chance to watch the first two episodes, and I actually really, really liked it. I think it was, for people who like 24/7, it certainly is worth going out and watching. You're not going to have the unedited swearing, for example, but I found, I can't remember if it was the first or second episode, but the everything going on in the off season, particularly on, I believe it was on the free agency day, as well as some of the stuff at the draft, I thought that was really, really interesting television and getting a chance to sort of at least as much of the reality as they were showing you, being able to go inside and see what the scouts had to say, see what the coaching staff, what the general manager had to say. I thought that was an interesting insight, and it was something that was really different from what we saw in 24/7, which was very, very focused on a compact part of the schedule, very focused on building up to the game and building up the really perfect storyline that fell into the NHL's lap with the whole Washington Capitals losing streak and the Pittsburgh Penguins winning streak. So definitely both are worth watching. That Oil Change should get more recognition than it's had to this point, I think.
I wonder if next year it'll be Brian Burke turning a new leaf will be the NHL documentary. That would be interesting.
Hey, TSN
would probably should be on HBO.
TSN wouldn't turn down an opportunity to get a Maple Leafs reality show on the air. I think they'd be happy with that.
You know, we don't have a whole lot left with you, but I want to. One of the things that you do on your show, and again, it's the Breakout Hockey Program at breakouthockey.podomatic.com. We'll have a link up on the site when we post this. But one of the things that you've done in the past, kind of a regular feature, I think is kind of fun, is who around the NHL has more points than Ilya Kovalchuk? Obviously, the $100 million man, the biggest story of free agency over the summer. Winds up in the New Jersey Devils, and subsequently the New Jersey Devils turn out to be one of the worst teams in hockey. who has more points than Ilya Kovalchuk right now? Do we know?
I think the question is who doesn't have more points. One of my favorite statistics kind of centered around that for the entire league, at least I believe going into the All-Star break, plus minus. Do you know where Ilya Kovalchuk ranked plus minus in the National Hockey League?
Well, I know he's a minus 29, and that's got to be the worst. The plus 20, Mazaros leads with plus 28.
I believe he is the worst, the absolute worst minus in the entire National Hockey League, which is insane when you think about that. Yeah, he's on a poor team. He's on a very bad team. But for him to have the worst plus-minus for a guy that, if there's anything he's done throughout his entire career, anything he's done, it's put up goals, and it fascinates me. But back to, and this is a guy who, this isn't, the guy I'm going to read off here, who isn't just a guy with a point or two more than Ilya Kovalchuk. This is a guy who is in, I believe, in the top 50, if not higher up. The Carolina Hurricanes through 44 games played, so it's not as if he's played the entire season. A guy who had been a playoff producer in previous years, but certainly not a guy that you would say, yeah, he's going to outproduce Ilya Kovalchuk. Juuse Jokinen of the Carolina Hurricanes has 12 goals, 26 assists, plus one. So Juuse Jokinen is just one, and he's pretty high up. There's obviously guys going much further down the list. I think I had mentioned on my show earlier in the year that Pascal Dupuis, of all people, who I believe he was, if I'm not mistaken, a throw-in along with Marian Hossa in the deal that sent Hossa to the Pittsburgh Penguins. Pascal Dupuis has been outproducing Ilya Kovalchuk throughout the year. So certainly not a short list.
Yeah, Chris Phillips has the second worst plus-minus rating, minus 23, and he only has 3 points to Kovalchuk's 29. So it's quite an amazing job that Kovalchuk has done there in New Jersey this year. Four rookies as well have more points than Kovalchuk. Jeff Skinner in Carolina, Logan Couture, who may be the best player on the San Jose Sharks, Taylor Hall, and Derek Stepan, who's been terrific for the New York Rangers in his rookie season. Picks, I wanted to get your thoughts on this. Who do you think at this stage, obviously some, I mean, we don't really ever see any more major earth-shattering deals that change the shape of the postseason before the deadline, but still that considered, at this point, who do you see coming out of the East and the West, and maybe your dark horse pick in each conference?
Out of the East, and we always talk about that the East is in some ways easier to pick, I think it's really easy to say Philadelphia, and I wouldn't dispute anybody that goes with Philly. But to me, the team, and granted, you look at their goals for, it's actually a little bit higher than some people would expect. They're not at the top of the league, but still a plus 40 in goals, a lot of that being due to their goaltending. I have a strange feeling that the Boston Bruins are going to come out of the Eastern Conference. And that I do not see Tim Thomas, his play dropping off at all. And if it does somehow, it's not as if you have a bad option coming back in with Tuukka Rask. And I have a sneaking suspicion that one way or the other, and maybe some of the way they get this cap space is by officially putting Mark Savard on long-term injured reserve, which I hope they do, and I hope Mark Savard, as much as I like him as a player, I kind of hope that he retires and finds a way to have a productive life, maybe become a broadcaster at some point. But that aside, I think Boston's going to find a way to get better at the deadline and come out of the East. The Western Conference, it's interesting to me in that we all, everybody who does shows like you do, shows like I do, we all talk about the Western Conference being so much better than the East. And in a lot of ways it is. But I look at the Western Conference and it seems to me that you have Vancouver and you have Detroit at the top. Then you have, and granted, Dallas is having a very good season, but you have Vancouver and Detroit as the odds-on favorites. Then you've got a group of teams, like I said, Dallas being third. But then you have Nashville, really, to me, all the way through Los Angeles in 11th, that the gap between the level of those teams is very, very little. And it's interesting in that almost all of those teams, you look at Nashville through LA, possibly Calgary and even St. Louis, they're all going to be looking, I would think, to add something at the trade deadline, which makes it a little bit harder to pick. If I'm Vancouver and Detroit, I'll say this, I don't like the matchups that I'm staring at in that Vancouver right now is going to be playing San Jose. And yeah, San Jose has had a very middling season, but they're getting hot right now, and we've seen, obviously, we here in Chicago have seen what Niemi can do. So if I'm Vancouver, San Jose isn't my favorite choice to be looking at. And obviously Detroit and Chicago, we haven't even really got into the Hawks yet on this show. But even with the season the Blackhawks have had to this point, I wouldn't see it out of the realm that they can knock off a team like Detroit. I look at Detroit as the favorite in the West. But to me, the dark horse, and it's kind of silly that they're a dark horse, the Dallas Stars, at this point, you have to say they're for real. I don't know what you guys think about Dallas. I don't know what you thought coming into the season. But it's really hard to at this point, write them off as just a team that's had a good first half, a team that's had a good first three-fifths of the season. At some point, people have to start taking them seriously.
Yeah, with Dallas, you know, I'm still not a fan of Kari Lehtinen. He's a nice guy. I've met him on many occasions. I've even shared beverages with the guy, and he's good at that. But as far as goaltending, I just don't trust him. I don't trust them with my team. I love Brad Richards. I like what they've done with that team. Brendan Moore is an excellent captain. Langenbrunner being in there. They're a team that, if they can get good goaltending, will give teams fits in the playoffs. I'm not sure that defense is completely capable of a long playoff run, but I would not want to play the Dallas Stars in the first round, especially if Leighton is playing well. The other team that I do want to bring up before we move on, and I want to get your thoughts on the Hawks real quick, is St. Louis. Now, they start up the second half tomorrow night in St. Louis with Colorado. It's a mega game. I mean, 2-7-1 in their last 10. St. Louis is getting a little bit healthy now. I think they're going to make a move, but they really need to get this thing in gear and maybe make something, earth-shattering, but maybe move Eric Johnson for something really special and get this thing moving in the right direction, because I think that they have the spare parts. You know, Crombie, Sobotka, Backes, they are built for the playoffs. They just got to get there. They've had a lot of injuries, and they've got Halak that they can ride if he can get that magic touch going again. But I would look for them as a dark horse team. Now, you mentioned the Blackhawks. Obviously, you go to a lot of the games, you watch them. They're in the same place as Montreal right now. I think that they're a team. We've talked about it here on the show, and our thoughts kind of is, you know, yes, to this point, very disappointing the way that the season's unfolded. But I'm not surprised that they're at where they're at right now. I'm just a little bit concerned with Marian Hossa. What's the deal with Patrick Kane and why he's just sort of uninterested at times. But I think that they're a team that if they can get hot, there's not a team in the league they can't beat. Except I think that the Flyers are a big problem, but that's, you don't have to worry about that for a while. What are your thoughts on the Blackhawks and what they can do and where they are up to this point?
Yeah, I tend to agree quite a bit with your assessment in that I'm not shocked either that they are sort of battling for that last playoff spot. I think to me the more surprising aspect is how it's happened in terms of the, you know, we've talked about the slow starts, but to me it's the amount of one-goal games that they've lost, the amount of games that have been tied going into the third or that they've had a one- or two-goal lead going into the third that have slipped away and they haven't even gotten a point out of it. But like you said, anything they play in the first round isn't going to be happy to see them. And maybe more than any other team in the league, I really think that what they're going to do in the playoffs, if they get there, hinges on what they do at the trade deadline, in that they don't need to make earth-shattering moves. I don't think you're going to see a superstar traded, but something needs to be done, which we've heard a lot here in the Chicago media, in terms of having another reliable defenseman that you can move into that third deep air, because Nick Boynton certainly isn't it. While I think the Hawks got more out of Jason Cullimore than I think anybody would have expected if they thought he'd be playing this year, he, I don't think, is the answer. If they can add something there, you need to add somebody on the fourth line that is a true fourth line player. In terms of who they would move to do that, obviously everybody's talking about Victor Sahlberg and Jack Skilly. Of those two, I know there's a lot of knocks on him, but I'm higher on Skilly in that we've seen at least flashes that he can play that fourth line role of going out there and hit, trying to make things happen. Whereas Victor Sahlberg, to me, after a really intriguing start to the year from him, he's really, really faded, and not just in terms of bad luck putting the puck into the net. He doesn't fit to me on a fourth line going into the playoffs, and he's not. Even with the turnover we've seen on the team and guys like Brouwer and Kopetsky, their status being up in the air for next season, to me, he's a guy that's never going to crack the top two consistently on this team. So if you can move him, and as weird as it would be picking up Marty Riesener since he was here in the offseason but obviously didn't play, if you can pick up a guy like that, I think that's what they need. But one thing I did want to touch on, you mentioned Patrick Kane. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts a little bit more on Kane, because he gets more of a free pass in this city from, like you referenced earlier, at least the casual fan, than anybody that's been on this team in a long time. What do you think the issue is with him? Do you think that it's a lack of conditioning coming into the season? Because to me, that's part of it, but it seems more than anything, he doesn't seem to be interested a lot of the time.
You know, I don't know. I'm not in that locker room, and I saw Patrick Kane on, I'm sure you saw this. It was a road game a few weeks ago, and they interviewed him between periods, and he was standing there with his sweat body armor top on, and he looked, for Patrick Kane, he looked just gigantic. I don't know how he got that big, but I wonder if he's carrying too much weight too soon. And maybe that's something. I don't know, but you're right. There's late in games, the jump's not there. I'll say this though, that game against Minnesota, he was one of the guys that in that game he was engaged the most. I mean, the play that he made on the goal that ended up being quick whistled and disallowed on Brent Burns, he won a physical battle against a guy that was 6'4". He wanted that puck. He got to it. He created the opportunity. And unfortunately, I don't think the Blackhawks win that game even if they get that call. But, that was a good start for him. I want to see more out of that from him. And hopefully now that that he can see postseason in his sights, maybe he gets a little bit more ramped up and engaged from night to night. But, I was calling for more criticism of Marian Hossa in the offseason coming out of last postseason just because he was brought here to score goals. It's great that he back checks. It's great that he plays in all zones and he looks incredible sometimes and almost superhuman one-on-one in physical battles and such. But he was brought here to score goals, and he's not scoring goals. And Patrick Kane is he's supposed to be setting up. I know that there was a movement to get Patrick Kane to shoot more, and it is important that he shoots to give himself that kind of space, to pass and vice versa. But, he's here to set up, and whether it's, if they find another center and Sharp moves back to the wing, even though I don't think that's their best option, whether it's Brouwer, whomever it is, I want to see him creating more space with his passing, because too often, it happens to be where Kane's trying to take guys on one-on-one and he's not using his teammates. I think first and foremost, that's where we should start with him and then see where it goes from there. I don't think he's lazy. I don't know about the conditioning thing, obviously, but I'd like to see his game start with maybe some of those adjustments.
My issue, just quickly with Kane, in terms of him going in one-on-one, which I agree, it seems like sometimes he's trying to do too much on his own, but I also think he's become very, very predictable when he comes into the zone one-on-one, in that he's going to make a move, he's going to maybe make a second move, and then he's immediately going to retreat for the boards. And obviously he's not a power forward, but I also think that it's very, very difficult to generate offense, particularly one-on-one, if you're going to go to the boards every single time, particularly right as you're entering the zone. And it seems like that's something he's doing on a regular basis, and maybe it's the ankle that's not allowing the speed to really work for him and turn the corner, but it's not working right now.
One quick thing before we go. I know that you've been out to Rockford a few times this season and seen some of the games. What are your impressions? Anybody out there that stands out to you as a prospect that you're excited about going forward?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting in that it's not as if they've had the most successful season in terms of as a team game, which is to be expected. Very, very few, compared to previous years, very few AHL veterans that can sort of guide the ship. Obviously, guys like Bracken Kearns, you had Colin on the team last year, whereas this year it's almost all prospects. Brandon Peary, I know the numbers aren't necessarily spectacular, but from the games I've seen, to me he's a guy that doesn't seem to be all that far off as far as a pro game. Obviously, everybody's aware of Jeremy Morin and what he's done, more so with the Hawks, but the few games I've seen him in Rockford, impressed by his offensive ability, but also impressed by his presence down low and his ability to not get intimidated. He's a guy who I think a lot of people see him and they think, oh, he's small. He's not the best skater in the world, but he certainly has improved his skating from a couple of years ago. But he's more willing to take a beating than I think a lot of people would have thought. A guy who certainly isn't going to be an NHL star by any means, but a guy who we saw get called up earlier in the season, and just tirelessly a hard worker and a guy who's got a ton of speed, Rob Klinkhammer, certainly very fun to watch as always. And have you had a chance to get down to Rockford since Dylan Olsen has been called up?
Yeah, I've seen him a few times now, and you know, the first few games, the first two games, they were dressing seven defensemen and sort of spotting his shifts, and now they're just dressing six. And you know, I think it's going to take a little bit of time with him. His footwork is not really where it needs to be. And Blackhawks fans, you know, this is a constant struggle that I have, and that if Blackhawks fans had their way, there'd be 18, 19, 20-year-old kids on the Blackhawks, and they'd all be going and winning Stanley Cups together. Dylan Olsen is going to be a very, very good NHL player, in my opinion. I've always been high on him, watching him, after he was drafted up there in Minnesota Duluth, also seeing him at two prospect camps, always very impressed with him. But his footwork needs a little help. He's a little bit slow in turning and going back to getting – he gets beat to the dump-ins. That's something that it'll come to him. But physically – he's going to grow into a really big, big guy. He knows what he's doing out there. I mean, he might be book smart. That book learning doesn't appeal to him. But he's got hockey sense. And I think that he may not make the team out of camp next year, but I think by this time next year, Dylan Olsen will be pushing to, if he's not already there, he'll be pushing to be in an NHL lineup. He needs to have a really good, you got to remember, Stan Bowman had no choice. I mean, Olsen's eligibility was in question, and you just can't have a kid like that sitting out, and he was probably leaving anyway. So he's here a little early, and he'll get great, great experience, but this is a huge off season for him personally. And I see him in the lineup next year at some point with regularity.
Well, the one thing he's got to his game, I was at the Pink in the Rink game not that long ago, and the one thing he seems to have, he has nastiness in his game. He's got the desire, it seems, to really to go hard along the boards and not be too concerned, which granted this could be a problem, but not be too concerned about taking a penalty. I'm interested to see how he plays the rest of the year, because I don't know how much you guys had a chance to watch the World Junior Championships, but it obviously had a pretty big role there, and it was not the best hockey that Dylan Olsen has ever played. So it'd be very, very, very intriguing to see how he plays the rest of the year, and really, to me, I want to find out how healthy he actually is. I know he's obviously playing, but it certainly looked in the World Juniors as though he was playing with at least a moderate injury, if not more. So, very interesting.
I think the word on him, not to cut you off, Adam, but I think the word on him in the World Juniors was that he was sick. I mean, that's just what I heard. Could have been.
There had to be something there, because the things that we've heard about him before and the things that I saw certainly in the one game I've seen him play in Rockford, he certainly didn't seem to have that in the World Juniors, especially on a Team Canada, that was very, very physical. He was one of the least physical guys in the tournament for that team, so that could be.
Yeah. All right, Adam, we're great having you on. We're going to do this again real soon, hopefully. And again, Adam Summers, the Breakout Hockey Program at breakouthockey.podomatic.com. And you also do, you and I used to be, I guess, colleagues at one point over there at the WrestlingObserver.com, F4WOnline.com. You host the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare, talking about Japanese pro wrestling over there. Maybe plug that show a little bit.
Yeah, we talk about just about everything on that show. We used to joke around that the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare was the only radio program that tried, and we feel somewhat successfully so, that tried to bridge the gap between Japanese professional wrestling and the National Hockey League. We talk about a wide range of things. But, yeah, if you, for some reason, are also interested in Japanese pro wrestling, MMA, and hockey as well, which, shockingly, there are a decent amount of people that are, certainly worth going over there and checking that out as well. Most of the shows are subscriber-only shows, but I nudge my co-host Mike Sempervivi enough that a couple times a year we'll throw a free show up there as well.
And all you have to do is drop the Sean Avery name, and all of a sudden you got 20 minutes of hockey discussion.
Yes, my co-host Mike Sempervivi named his child after Sean Avery. So that tells you all you need to know about the battles that we go through on that show when it comes to hockey on a regular basis.
Before you go, Takeshi Segura finishes fourth in the Wrestling Observer Year End Awards. Is that right to you, or you know, a little high, you think?
Are you talking about in terms of the Wrestler of the Year Award, or
yeah, the Wrestler of the Year?
It depends. It's a weird category. I think that from a booking standpoint, it's hard to argue with him being in the conversation, in that he was very, very dominant after many years of just languishing in the mid card. But you look at what he drew. I mean, under his watch, and it's an oversimplification, because Pro Wrestling Noah has many more problems than Takeshi Sugiura as the heavyweight champion of the company. But under his watch, they have had very, very small crowds that have led to them having to retreat from their former mainstay building for big shows, Budokan Hall. They've had to retreat from there on two separate occasions. So in-ring, great. As a draw, certainly not. But it's almost, unless Kenta Kobashi comes back somehow miraculously and is the champion of that company, I don't think it matters who's at the top. They're going to be drawing half houses at best for their big shows.
I don't think Kenta Kobashi should come back.
No, he probably shouldn't, but I would almost guarantee that at some point, if he feels even close to being healthy enough, he probably will. And it won't be for the best for him personally, but he'll probably do it.
I worry that, much like Misawa, that he's going to be one of those guys that meets his end in the place that he probably would like to meet it. And I worry the same about Ric Flair. One more question before you go. Shinsuke Nakamura, will he finally meet his potential in 2011?
Yeah, I think he will, and I actually think, and believe me, Nakamura, he is probably the biggest point of contention for me and Mike on the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare. Mike is a huge fan of Mr. Nakamura. Up until this past year, had been very skeptical of him, a guy who's had some great matches, a guy who had been groomed to be the top star of New Japan Pro Wrestling and had in many ways not reached it. But this year, if you get a chance, go back and watch really any of his matches, any of his big matches from 2010, whether it be the early part of the year when he was the IWGP champion or his stuff in the G1, his three-match series with Go Shiozaki, even the IWGP title challenge against Satoshi Kojima in December. He's been great ever since he went to this, if you can call it a gimmick, of kind of a disinterested punk who happens to throw really, really hard knee strikes to the face. It seems to have worked. So hopefully he can keep it going. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets the belt at some point in 2011.
All right, we'll look forward to it. Thanks a lot again, Adam. And again, breakouthockey.podomatic.com and also Wrestling Observer F4WOnline.com for the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare. Thanks a lot, Adam. Get ready for the snow, and we'll talk to you soon.
Definitely. Thanks, guys, for having me on, and watch out for Snowmageddon, I guess.
All right, take care, Mike. Or Mike, Adam. Tell Mike I said I do.
God,
all right, Superstar. I have my notes in front of me. All right, Superstar. How you been?
I'm good. Yourself?
Busy. Real busy, busy, busy. And that's a good thing, I guess.
Yeah, always better busy than not.
All right, we got a six-game, another one of these. It seems just like 5 shows ago we were talking about a Blackhawks six-game road trip, but tomorrow night or Tuesday night, Columbus Blue Jackets, the Blackhawks are in Columbus, kick off a six-game road trip that will immediately take them out west to Vancouver for the big game on Friday night at, I guess they're calling it Rogers Center now, or Rogers Arena, one of the two. Doesn't matter. General Motors Place, Vancouver on Friday night. No games over the weekend, interestingly enough, with the Blackhawks out there. You'd figure the CBC would take advantage and get the Blackhawks on Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday night. Did not happen. They have Saturday and Sunday off. They'll be in Calgary next Monday night. And then we will be back on the air next Tuesday. So whatever. But six-game road trip, Superstar. What's a successful road trip for the Blackhawks?
No, nothing under 4 points, 4 wins. You got to go and win 4. I believe Eddie Olczyk was talking about this upcoming trip during the Minnesota game, and he said, generally you want a six-game trip, you come home with 6 points out of that, but you kind of consider that a successful trip. Well, in the Western Conference, you're not making up any ground at that point. You're not making them ground at 6 points. I think you need 8 to be successful here.
Yeah, I mean, it really needs to be said that this is, they cannot afford to have a bad road trip. 56 points right now, that's, we talked about it a little bit with Adam. You had San Jose in the 8th spot currently, and I don't have the percentages in front of me like I usually do, so we'll just go off the standings. And everybody's sort of played the same amount of games now, whether it be 50, 51, or 49. So the Blackhawks have some work to do in order to leapfrog teams, and I think that that's what they should be looking at, not staying ahead of, the 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th place teams. I think they should be looking to leapfrog teams. So with that in mind, first off, we'll state who's behind them. San Jose, 56 points, same amount of games. Colorado, same amount of games, 56 points. And like we said, Colorado on Tuesday nights in St. Louis. Minnesota, interestingly enough, the last game the Blackhawks played, 4-2 loss to the Wild. The next home game the Blackhawks play will actually be against the Wild as well. So those are important games that the Blackhawks can't afford to lose. They just went ahead and did one. But Minnesota, 55 points in 49 games, so essentially the same team as the Blackhawks. As amazing as that is, the Minnesota Wild are basically record-wise and by the statistical evidence, are just as good as the Blackhawks. That's insulting. The LA Kings, 55 points in 50 games. And then I think you get the also-rans. Calgary needs to go on a real big run, I think. 54 points in 51 games. Columbus or the Blackhawks can effectively bury tomorrow night, Tuesday night in Columbus at Nationwide Arena. Columbus, 49 games, 51 points. And then, as I mentioned, the St. Louis Blues, who need – they got their work cut out for them, 51 points in 49 games. You know, they just don't score goals. I mean, that's their problem. They're a good team, but they just don't score enough goals. And I think that's what they should be looking at. They should be looking at acquiring goal scorers. I don't think they can wait to the trade deadline. They may be out of it by the trade deadline. So look for the St. Louis Blues to do something in a hurry here, but they also need to go on a run. They need their prize goaltender to be great. They need that defense. They need Eric Brewer to step up and be a real captain. They need Barrett Jackman to be a dependable guy each and every night. But getting back to the Blackhawks, the thing about this road trip that really concerns me, you know, the Blackhawks have played a lot of crazy games in Nationwide Arena with the Columbus Blue Jackets. So that's, you know, that's a game that concerns me. I think the Blackhawks could very well go in there and get beat up by the Blue Jackets. That very well could happen. As good as the Vancouver Canucks are, the Blackhawks play very well in Vancouver. I could see the Blackhawks winning that game. Calgary, Edmonton, I think those are very winnable games for the Blackhawks. What concerns me about this road trip is how it ends. Back-to-back nights, the following Friday and Saturday, starting in Dallas, which, again, is a hard place for the Blackhawks to win. A lot of crazy games down there at American Airlines Arena. And then the following night, the next night, they're in Phoenix. I don't trust those two games. I think the Blackhawks need I'd like them to start the road trip with four victories, but I think they need 7 out of 8 points in these first four games in order for this to be put themselves in position to be a successful road trip, because I just don't trust those final two games. Dallas is a better hockey team right now than the Blackhawks, and Phoenix is a tough team to play. If they get off to a bad start to this road trip, it's uh-oh time, because I do not like that the way that trip ends.
Yeah, you hit on that. And the other thing that's important, if you look at the road trip and even going forward in the next month or so, we're back to, once again, tons of conference games. Obviously, the schedule is, you know, heavy on the conference games. But next month, if you look at it, it's almost all conference games coming up. And with the conference as tight as it is, you're right. You can't afford to be falling behind. So you do need to get off a good start.
Back to the All-Star game. What did you think about Patrick Sharp being named? And I didn't see the game, but I got the score sheet in front of me. I wanted to ask you about this. Patrick Sharp being named the All-Star. Now, first of all, was it done by just fan texting?
Yeah, I don't know if that was the only way, or if there was some in-arena voting there as well. But obviously, whenever you have a guy from the Hawks who is such a game that puts him in contention and you're leaving it up to the fans, you know, you're going to see a good turnout for him. Was I shocked that he got it? No, I thought he played really well. And it was maybe it was that there was two number 10s. On team stall between Corey Perry and Patrick Sharp, because it seemed like every shift he was out there. So maybe
together they had
5 points.
Yeah, together they had 5 points. But Patrick Sharp had a goal and 2 assists. And in a game that saw 21 goals, Patrick Sharp's point production was done by goal 9. I've heard and read, and just looking at the stat sheet, the other guys that you could have put, and of course Patrick Sharp wins the MVP on the losing team. I guess the other guys that would have come up for discussion: Louis Erickson, 2 goals, 2 assists, but one of those goals was the empty netter at the end, which wound up being the game winner. It's impossible to look at the stat line. What immediately jumps out to you is Nicholas Lidstrom and Shea Weber paired together were a plus 13 between them. Shea Weber, 4 assists, plus 6. You know, I mean, I don't know. I didn't watch it, but, I mean, anytime, you know, I just don't trust Blackhawks fans to do anything right. So if they ruined it, I don't know. But I don't see any grave injustice here. Maybe Louis Erickson. I don't know. But
I don't think there was an injustice. And, you know, for a long time, they had Sharp down as a goal and three assists, with the three assists coming in the first period. So they may have made an amendment or a change. But during the broadcast, it was a goal and three assists for Sharp.
Wanted to make mention of a few things. First of all, I'm going to be doing a show later on in the week as I sort of – we're going to kind of wrap this thing up here in a little bit because I am going to come back later in the week, possibly if you're available, Superstar. If not, I'll do it on my own. We may even do one in the same room on Saturday night. Well, maybe we'll try to do that. But I have some new equipment I want to try out, and I have some things to I don't know. But the plan right now is if I can find an hour of free time in this week here later on, in a couple days or so, I want to try out some new equipment and do a new show. So we're going to wrap up here shortly because of that. I don't think anybody could take too much of this. Even with all the snow, and I'm sure people are going to be pinned inside their homes very shortly, I think too much Third Man in Radio is not a good thing. So I've heard. Nick Leddy brought back up to the Blackhawks today. Of course, the Blackhawks back to practice. Not much of note, of course, because the All-Stars were excused today. We'll join the team. The team's already in Columbus by the time we're talking here, and obviously by the time most people are listening to this. But Nick Leddy brought back up. I want to talk about this because this is something that really bothers me. Nick Leddy, not only was he sent down to the minors, okay, not only did the Rockford IceHogs play two games while he was supposedly in the minors, and of course Nick Leddy didn't play in either one of those games, okay, but he never even reported to the team. Okay.
And how much money did we save?
Well, I mean, I don't have the exact. I mean, out of the top of my head, it's like $30,000, okay? Or that's probably about the amount of money that the Blackhawks took out of Nick Leddy's pocket. Which is, you know, of course, the fans don't care about that kind of stuff. They just care about how much money the Blackhawks are saving.
Right.
$30,000 out of Nick Leddy's pocket. Plus, he can't play in hockey games because he's getting a little vacation. I had a big, you know, if I'm Donald Fehr. And I don't want to be Donald Fehr. Or if I'm Nick Leddy's agent, I'm furious about this. And if I'm the NHLPA, I'm furious about this because if you're Stan Bowman, or if you're the NHL, if you're Gary Bettman, how do you explain this? A guy who's in the NHL, who is playing a regular shift as a third pair guy, so he's good enough to play every night in the NHL, so says the Blackhawks. Gets reassigned to the minors, and then is a healthy scratch in two games. And it's not a case of, well, you know, he just got there and, you know, maybe he was a little banged up or something. No, the Blackhawks last played on Tuesday. He got reassigned on Wednesday. There was no game on Wednesday. There was no game on Thursday. They played in Grand Rapids on Friday night. I could even see that he doesn't make the trip to Grand Rapids. But for him not to play in Grand Rapids and or Rockford on Saturday night, explain that to me. Because you can't say that he's banged up because then you have a situation of, well, the kid got banged up in the NHL. You know, he suffered an NHL ailment, an ailment suffered in the NHL, so you reassigned him to the AHL so he could heal making AHL money. Under no circumstance is this acceptable. You know, I know that people, oh, who cares? The Blackhawks are saving money, and maybe they could get to... No, that's not the point. The point is, it's cap circumvention. I'm all excited. I got the AHL All-Star game playing in front of me. But, you know, it's wrong. It should, you know, somebody should be standing up for this player. You know, I mean, I'm sure in Nick Leddy's mind and his agent's mind, they're like, well, we don't want to rock the boat. At the end of the day, one, you know, he's going to be a long-term NHL player, and he'll make a lot of money, and this will all be forgotten, and maybe it will be. But it's still wrong. You know, if the player is good enough to be in the NHL, and you're going to send him down to the AHL, then he better play while he's there. Otherwise, the NHL team should have some explaining to do. Because that's, you know, did the Blackhawks break a rule per se? No, I don't think so. But it's still ethically, it's wrong, and I just don't agree with it. You know.
No, it'd be interesting to see if he just went and traveled with the Hawks to Columbus, anyways.
Well, no, he did. He was back with the team today, but he was on vacation all weekend. He wouldn't, you know. You know, I mean, he got a break. He got an all-star break, but he got an all-star break on AHL money. That's wrong. You know, that's wrong. That's not the way it should be, and they should have you know, some questions to have answered. I don't see how they could do that, and that's acceptable. That's something that needs to be changed in the next CBA. And I also want to make this point, because I know a lot of people are concerned, and as they should be, about the next CBA. I've made this point before, and I want to state it again. Just because there is no new agreement in place, you know, of course now we have this season and we have next season, okay? At the end of 2011-12 is when the CBA expires. June 30th, 2012. That's when the CBA expires. At that point, okay, even though there's no new agreement, does not necessarily mean there cannot be an NHL season in 2012-13. There could be no new agreement reached, and hockey could still go on unaffected. Because there, in the current CBA, it states that if there is no new agreement reached, that the agreement that we have now just rolls over. And hockey continues on. That's the way it is. That's the way it goes. So if there's no new CBA agreed upon, they continue to operate under the one that they're currently operating under. It would take a work stoppage. It would take one side or the other saying, no, we are not continuing under these conditions. So it would take the players striking or the NHL and the owners locking the players out. So just because there's no agreement, and there's a lot of apprehension, there's a lot of nervousness that Donald Fehr came out and said, well, I don't even plan on talking to Gary Bettman about a new CBA until the spring of 2012, which I agree is asinine. And it's just completely ridiculous that he, you know, they're not going to start talking until 2 months before the thing ends. That's unacceptable. But that being said, Even if they don't hammer out a CBA in the 2 or 3 months that they give themselves to negotiate one before the current CBA ends, does not necessarily mean that hockey can't go on. You know, I think that you'll continue to have just like the last time around. I don't know how many people listening to this were hockey fans when the last lockout happened, but you know. Everything went on, you know, free agency went on, all that stuff went on. It wasn't until, you know, the owners decide, that's it. We're not, you know, we're locking these guys out. We want our salary cap. So just wanted to make that point again, very clear, because I think there's a lot of people that don't understand that. But that's the way it is. All right. Anything else pertinent on your mind?
No.
We got a lot of stuff that I wanted to talk to Adam about, but we didn't have a lot of time with Adam, so a lot of things here that we didn't get to. We'll get him on again. He was a good guest, and he's got a good show. Check that out again, breakouthockey.podomatic.com. It was one a week. They're not quite as long as ours, so you don't get put through near the pain that we put you through. We've got a big UFC coming up this weekend, Superstar. Are you excited?
I am thoroughly looking forward to it.
And then that crazy thing they call the big game on Sunday. Are you excited about that at all?
I was telling somebody today that with the Bears getting so close and falling short, I think it's taken the luster off of it, you know, for a lot of people, you know, in the city of Chicago, not just myself, more so than if the Bears finished third place in their division, didn't make the playoffs, and, you know, I think it would be a bigger deal. I think it's more deflated this year than it normally is.
Yeah,
well done not using the actual terms. You don't have to pay the NFL.
No. I'm sure I owe a lot of royalties to a lot of people for this show, so I think that's the one that I'm most concerned about. Until I start playing Rolling Stones music on this,
yeah,
which I might do, but not tonight. All right, like I said, I should also say about the website. I don't know if anybody, like I said, I've been really busy, and I've actually found some of the old. Files. I've been cruising the internet looking for old cache files of our old posts and stuff like that, so we can try to rebuild the archive. You know, I'm the only person on the internet who's been around for 5 years, but has 2 months of evidence of such. So I've been going and finding some things, so you know, people can a little bit of history on the site there that people can peruse through and go back and read some. Fascinating stuff, I'm sure.
You haven't come across the newsletter file, did you?
Oh yeah, I just for whatever reason it won't upload on the internet. but yeah, I was going through a lot of that. I don't know, was it one of the nights this weekend? Got some interesting thing coming up this week. Interview I did with Kyle Beach, so we got a story on that. Also Mathis Olim, some other things of interest. And I was looking back, I used to do way back in the day before the Blackhawks got good and the site actually got hits. I did this thing called Sunday Shorts, and I actually started writing this thing on Sunday, and then I got sidetracked doing actual real work that I get a little bit more important than hockey blogging. And
yeah.
You know, sometimes that happens.
Yeah, sometimes.
And I want to kind of bring that back. It's a fun little thing. It was interesting going through some of the old stuff that I used to do I completely forgot about. So maybe we'll bring some of that back. And then, like I said, Saturday night, you and I will be watching the UFC together. And perhaps we'll do a show. We'll actually be sitting across from each other.
That would it would be interesting.
Yeah, when I want to cut you off, I can actually just wave at you, and you will stop talking.
I can't see you doing that when you're trying to cut me off now.
Yeah, it's happening. There's all sorts of hand gestures going on during this show, but yeah, you can't see any of them.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, look at that! You can't see that. I'm on radio.
It's funny you mentioned that, because I was talking to the guys over at Radio Exposed, and they were absolutely blown away that we have no other communication during the show other than just talking on the air. They're like, wait, you guys have email or Google Talk or, you know, text or anything? I'm like, no, we just get on and wing it. They were blown away by that.
Well, they're industry professionals.
They are.
We're breaking new ground here.
Yeah. You didn't happen to catch our show last night, did you?
No, it's in the queue of things that I have to listen to here today.
Awfully good last night.
Yeah, I'm going to listen to it. I have, after we get done here, I have all three Rockford IceHogs games from this past week that I'm going to watch tonight. You know, kill me now. Rockford has just been... I mean, by all reports, they've been playing halfway decently, but 2 weeks ago they were three games above 500, and now they're a game below 500. Still technically a game. They lost in overtime the other night. They lost five in a row. So their playoff hopes are pretty much dead. They're not going to come back from this. But I'm going to watch those here in a little bit. So might as well be done with this thing here, Superstar.
All righty.
I thought it was a successful night.
Yeah, I did too, as always.
I did want to acknowledge, now that I'm looking at the audio board here.
Pull my pants down a little bit and show them the Hockey Night logo.
I want to thank Forklift over there at thehockeynight.com. I finally did receive my Hockey Night thong.
Oh, Jesus. I'm not coming over on Saturday.
I don't think I share this with Fork, but I passed it along. So you don't have to worry, Superstar.
Okay.
looks much better on someone else than it does me.
How is the lady friend?
I'm sure she's doing fine as long as she doesn't listen to this. Which I wonder if she does, because sometimes she says things that I gotta wonder. She claims she doesn't, but I think she might. All right, we got a new song to play on the way out. Me and Superstar will talk to you on Saturday night. We're definitely going to try this. We're going to try this out. I'm looking forward to it. Saturday night, Superstar and I will be putting something up on the internet. I don't know if it'll be one of those post UFC shows. You know, we'll blur the lines between hockey and mixed martial arts. But we'll do that. We'll probably be drinking.
I would, you could probably amend that and just say we will be drinking.
Johnny always says you can just screw so much and drink so much.
I would almost guarantee it.
Yeah. You can put that one into the lock.
All right, so we'll talk to you. I'll probably talk to you later on in the week if I can figure out how to work technology. And then Saturday night, at some point Sunday morning, Superstar and I will be back talking a couple of Blackhawks games, maybe a little UFC, and a whole bunch of other things. And I don't know if we'll make any sense because we'll be drinking, but we'll do it. It'll be entertaining, I'm sure. And we'll talk Snowbageddon. Thanks again to Adam Summers of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare. They're at WrestlingObserver.com. And also Adam's show, Breakout Hockey Program, at breakouthockey.podomatic.com. Thanks again, Superstar. I will talk to you later this week.
All right, sounds good, buddy.
All right. Thanks again, everybody, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday night if you miss us over the weekend. Good night, everybody.
Up north in Chicago, where blues makes no one blush. Memories come back to you in a double bourbon rush. Memories, they aren't all bad, and neither my friend are you. There is an argument, there must be some heaven that my heart said are half true. Oh, yet if you spend your whole life pulling horses into Troy, no, you will not go to heaven. You'll go to Champaign, Illinois. No, you will not go to heaven. You'll go to Champaign, fields in the distance, and that's the last big one. After that comes judgment. Oh, and judgment will be swift. You will be eliminated, but here's a parting shot. Oh, if you die fearing God and painfully
Make him humble.
Hello, Peter. What's happening?
Such a fine line between stupid and clever.
What are you doing up here? You been benched yet?
Yes, some real first in my professional career. I've been benched.
Why is that?
I won't fight.
Well, you could play if you fought.